This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Good morning, you're listening to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Lin Mark. Dato' Sri Chia Cheng Hai is a Penangite and former journalist who moved to Hong Kong in the 70s to further his career. After years writing for the Hong Kong Standard, the Asian Wall Street Journal and the Far Eastern Economic Review, he then went on to co-found Value Partners, an independent asset management company that listed on the Hong Kong Stock Exchange in 2007. Since then, Value Partners has accumulated more than 40 funds with $11.8 billion in assets under management. I'm pleased to welcome to the show this morning Dato' Sri Chia Cheng Hai, co-chairman and co-chief investment officer at Value Partners. Dato' Sri, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Lin.
You are very much a prominent face of the company. So when an asset management house like you does seem to be dependent on personalities, how do you ensure continuity? So what kind of succession planning have you had to put in place at Value Partners?
Lin, that's a pretty good question, and one that we've been working on since our listing in 2007. We are the only independent Hong Kong asset management brand listed on the Hong Kong Stock Exchange. And what I really did was that from 2014, I appointed a successor, and that was very public. It was mentioned many times in the local Hong Kong media that my successor is Mr. Louis So, who have been with Value Partners for more than 20 years. So the two of us are now running the company. We have been trying very hard to communicate with the market as a listed company, and you have clients from all over the world, that the company is increasingly institutionalized and less dependent on me on a daily basis. I don't know to the extent to which you have succeeded, but don't forget that Value Partners started as a company with just $4.5 million under management in 1993. As of today, it's managing roughly $12 billion. It started with two employees, me and a secretary, and today has 200 employees. So we have really come a very long way.
So speaking of your assets under management, though, Dato' Sri, currently it stands at about $12 billion. At the end of last year, your assets under management was at about $15 billion. So what happened in that intervening time?
Yes, COVID-19 has given us quite a setback, the worst setback we suffered since roughly 2008 global financial crisis. We have seen fund outflows, but we think this is a temporary problem. For example, mainland China, which is our single most important area of coverage as an investor, is experiencing a V-shaped recovery. We think it's only a matter of time before we can restore our funds under management back to the $15 billion level we had at the end of last year, and then beyond that. But you're right. We have seen outflows. Funds under management dropped to $12 billion from $15 billion. And this year will not be a very interesting year in terms of our profitability as an asset management company. We remain profitable, but obviously profits are way, way down. Management's emphasis this year is not actually on the profits of the company, but on the safety of our firm, the safety of our funds, and the safety of our clients. But having said that, please know that the majority of our funds are year-to-date above water. Our best-performing funds are up between 17 to 35% year-to-date. And our flagship fund has experienced a gain of roughly 7.5% year-to-date.
I mean, it has been a significant enough problem, I think, in the first 6 months of this year, considering that you saw redemptions of about $4 billion, subscriptions only of $1.9 billion. So when do you expect this trend to perhaps reverse itself?
It is reversing itself right now, even as we speak. I can't go into details right now because I can't actually announce it yet. We have been able to obtain some very significant mandates, both locally and from a certain Western country. But money hasn't actually arrived in our office, so I can't say too much about it. We also have slightly over 4 billion Hong Kong dollars worth of equity capital, shareholders' funds. The bulk of it in very liquid form or in cash. So it's a very solid situation.
All right. And talk to me as well about your clientele, Datuk Sri, because I understand that nearly 70% of your clientele consists currently of retail investors as well as high net worth individuals. Are you going to be continuing along this vein, or will you be targeting more institutional investors in future since they represent only about 20% of your client base?
Indeed, that's our overall strategy. As of right now, Hong Kong is our home market. Within Hong Kong, we are roughly 1 million clients out of a population of 7.5 million people. I think we are hitting the limits of how far we can continue to grow in Hong Kong, which is not such a big market, and it's a mature market for us. We have 27 years. The future for us is on the mainland of the country, mainland China, which is only now beginning to open its doors to Hong Kong and foreign fund managers. We are considered one of the top 10 pioneers there. We are introducing value investing. We are introducing long-term fundamental research. We now have about 40, 45 people in China. We have got most of the licenses we need, but we still don't have the retail license, which will give us full access to the Chinese public. But China has already opened up the door for that. So we are in the process of trying to get that license. Although, of course, I can't predict whether we actually get it. Mm. The Chinese people are very underinvested in financial securities. So we are there.
But Dr. Su, just to backtrack a little bit to what you initially said, I mean, overall, Value Partners is looking at transitioning perhaps to a larger portion of institutional investors. But in this business, size is everything. And an $11.8 billion asset under management is, at the end of the day, a drop in the ocean compared to some of the big American companies. I mean, BlackRock has $7.5 trillion under their AUM. So you will have to grow significantly. What are some of the strategies you have to do that outside of growing into China?
Yeah, it all depends on your business model. For a firm like Value Partners, our business model is basically based on performance of funds. So, for example, our flagship plastic fund has delivered a return of something like 14% for annual net to client compounded over 27 years. Eventually, we do win over the clients. Even in the mainland of China, where we are considered to be not quite foreign, we are from Hong Kong, but we're not really mainland either, right? We have been able to crack the accounts of something like four of the banks and several of the large major brand insurance companies, simply through performance, not through any special relationship. It's a complex situation.
But as you said, of course, it all comes down to fund performance. And I've noticed that fixed income has become an increasingly important component of Value Partners' portfolio. So it stood at 44% of the portfolio in 2019, compared to 5% when you first started incorporating fixed income in 2012. Now, if you are indeed prioritizing fund performance, you know, what will this continue to be the case? Will we continue to see this growth in fixed income, even in this era of a low interest rates?
We are very driven by a number of points. The first is simply the massive opportunity we find ourselves in. At a time when, due to COVID-19, monetary easing, most of the world now, most of the developed countries, including Japan, Europe, and North America, are moving to interest rates that are almost zero, or in the case of Europe and Japan, negative. Our part of the world, including China, continues to offer very nice, positive interest rates. China has been a remarkable story. It's experiencing a V-shaped recovery. It was the first in and its first out of the pandemic. And the Chinese government, through its very successful measures to control the pandemic, has been able to achieve an economic recovery without having to resort to massive fiscal and monetary stimulus. For high yield bonds, we are not satisfied if we don't get at least like 7% in yield per annum. And this is in the currency, the Chinese renminbi, or sometimes in US dollars. For renminbi bonds, we see that the dollar started to weaken from late March, and it's now on a weakening trend. So you may also have the additional benefit of a rising renminbi on top of the yield that you're getting.
You sound very certain that China is heading into a V-shaped recovery. And while the Chinese government certainly hasn't held back when it comes to trying to mitigate the effects of COVID-19, we're not out of the woods yet. And there are fears that there could be a second or a third wave of the coronavirus in China. I mean, Hong Kong itself is experiencing what some would say is a third wave of infections at this point.
You can't be sure. In fact, you put your finger on it, because I think the major risk facing the recovery all over the world, but for China and Hong Kong in general, is the possibility of a third wave of infection. Mm. And secondly, is the disastrous situation in Sino-American relations. So I am confident to the extent that I can be confident. But having been in the investing world since the 1980s, I know that there are no certainties. But in the case of China, I can point out a number of points. One is that the supply side of the Chinese economy recovery has been truly astonishing since April. There are various independent sources of information and also official sources of information. And we're also employing consultants who get their information almost on a real-time basis. But demand is lagging behind. The consumer remains worried. He's not spending as much as before. There are some unemployment worries arising from the fact that 9 million young people graduate from college every year in China. My overall summary is to say that the consensus prediction for the Chinese economy is a growth of roughly 2.5% in GDP for 2020, followed by a much higher growth, possibly 6 to 6.5% in 2021. That is really a significant achievement, especially in the context that China has been able to bring this recovery about without resorting to the kind of extreme stimulus that we have seen in the United States, Japan, and Europe. They have kept most of their bullets still in their pocket. They haven't taken it out yet. So if there's a third wave, if there is another major disaster with Sino-American nations, there's still scope for major stimulus in China.
I'm speaking with Dato' Chia Ching Hai, co-chairman and co-chief investment officer at Value Partners, an independent asset management company based in Hong Kong. Stay tuned for more in just a few minutes. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Breakfast Grill, where I'm speaking with Dato' Chia Ching Hai, co-chairman and co-chief investment officer at Value Partners. Now, Dato' Sri, so far we've talked a little bit about Value Partners' performance thus far and your strategies to weather COVID-19. But now I'd like to turn our attention to Sino-American relations. Value Partners as well in 2018 did see a fund performance suffer as a result over all of these worries at the time over a potential trade war. So putting aside what the Chinese government is doing to position themselves in the face of these tensions with the US, what is Value Partners doing to avoid the same kind of fund performance dip?
You'll find our investment style is even more conservative than before. More research-driven, and with what value investors I mean, call a margin of safety. Mm-hmm. Having said that, the Sino-American relationship, I just think it's an election year, and election year politics are never lessened. And I think that to some extent, China has become a very convenient punching bag for President Donald Trump. I remain hopeful that after the election is over, whether Trump remains president or Biden comes to power or whatever, at some point, China and America will have to find a way to become partners again. So as a long-term investor, I'm not as pessimistic as you might think. I still remain hopeful. But I do agree that the next couple of months is going to be a difficult and dangerous time in terms of the Sino-American relationship. So we are quite conservative, quite alert, quite careful. We have also told some of our clients if they wish, they should diversify some of their assets into gold. I think that the Chinese authorities now, the key word is, in English, it's called dual circulation. It's the word now being used by people like President Xi, and etc. It means that China increasingly must focus on a business and economic model for the country that emphasizes be much more self-reliant, much more develop its own domestic market and domestic production, and so become less dependent on having to interact with the outside world. Nevertheless, having said that, China also recognized that having open market, exchanges and technology, goods and services is good for China and good for the world. So China will still engage with the outside world.
So, Dato' Sri, I also do want to ask you about Value Partners' presence here in Malaysia, because you opened up a unit here in 2018. And I just wanted to know your thoughts on the Malaysian investment landscape. There are those who cast aspersions on the Malaysian market, saying that we cannot be a capital market hub. What's your perspective on this?
We opened our office there in 2018. At the moment, our presence is quite humble. We just have six people. We are about to come up with our first two or three Make in Malaysia products. The very first one that you will see in coming months is a Sharia-compliant real estate fund. Mm. Our intended target would be in the region of 500 million ringgit. And this is a pioneer effort that has already received very strong support from Malaysian institutional investors and overseas as well. And we're putting our own seed money as capital. We may have other products as well. So Malaysia is a sweet spot for us. I'm really very happy about it. Regarding Malaysia as a capital market, here's the thing. Malaysia, I think for the last few years, including this year, has suffered a net outflow of foreign investors. I think if Malaysia is to break out the middle-income trap, we had to do a much better job. We need to get investments going, both foreign and domestic investments. We have to attract them. You know why? Because to get to a next level of economic development, Malaysia really needs to increase its productivity. I have my doubts about whether Malaysia is doing a good job. Because to attract investors, you have to raise the level of your game in terms of reducing political uncertainty, in terms of really making a serious effort to make sure that is really to be a corruption-free society. We can do it, but I believe there's still quite a lot of measures to be that needs to happen.
So taking all of that into account, Dato' Sri, how big a part do you see Malaysia playing in Value Partners' growth story going forward with the launch of the Sharia Fund that you mentioned, which was supposed to be due in the second half of 2020? How big of a part do we have to play here?
The first thing we had to do with Malaysia, which is only a two-year-old subsidiary, is that we had to make sure it's profitable. And I'm actually confident we'll get there. It won't be too late. Once the platform is profitable, we see Malaysia's potential, first, as our center for servicing the Muslim communities around the world, including China itself. I think Malaysia will be a great place to formulate and manufacture products that can be sold not only domestically, but to Muslim constituents around the world. Ultimately, I think Value Partners' most immediate future has to be to achieve a breakthrough, a real penetration of the world's greatest investment opportunity, which is mainland China. But if we are successful there, we will become a world-class, world-sized asset management group.
Indeed. But I'm just wondering when you hope to see Value Partners Malaysia become profitable, Dato' Sri.
The profitability part is quite easy for me to answer. Mm-hmm. If these Sharia products I mentioned earlier take off, which I think they will, the timing is right, the people are there, we could probably be profitable from next year. It's not only a place to create funds and sell funds. It's also a place where we can hope to relocate some of our operations.
And before I let you go, Dato' Sri, I just wanted to ask a question about value investing, because you're a big proponent of value investing. But over the last few years, there has been an increasing shift towards more passive styles of investing. The US in August last year saw assets in index-based funds and ETFs surpass those in active stock funds for the very first time. So, you know, while there is, you know, arguably still a space for value investing, that space is shrinking. So where does that leave you?
Yes, what you said about the United States is true. I believe probably about half the trading now in the New York stock market comes from machine-driven, computer-driven, or passive investing styles. That is true of the USA. over here, they have not been very successful. And you know why? Because our industries, our regulations have not really liberalized like in Australia or US or UK. Here, funds, like my old boss, Mr. C, I used to tell me, in finance here, funds are made to be sold. Funds are not bought, they are sold. What does that mean? People don't come and buy your funds just like that in Asia. You have to have salespeople to sell it to them, to push it to them. And these salespeople, these intermediaries, they need to be rewarded. You have to create a fee structure that allows distributors to earn this distribution fee. And the problem with exchange-traded funds is that the fees are so low. There's very little to spare for the middleman, for the banks, for the independent intermediaries and wealth management want to have a cut before the product reaches the public. That's why you find that exchange-traded funds in both Malaysia, Hong Kong, and Singapore have so far played only a relatively minor part of the whole industry. It's still the active funds with fees of at least like 1% to 2% per annum that are flourishing. That's because out of this 1% to 2% annual fee or more, you can spare a decent amount for your distributor's fees. Interesting that the exchange-traded funds have become more prominent in mainland China than in Hong Kong or Southeast Asia. In mainland China, with the proliferation of digital media, I think there's something like 900 million Chinese people are using internet, using their mobile phone to access internet. The audience there is much more willing to get, it's much more educated in that sense, yeah, in terms of the fees they're paying for asset management services.
That would mean, yes, it would be more of an uphill battle for you, the value investor, looking to go into China, wouldn't it?
Not necessarily, because we find that the bucket in China, unlike Malaysia, Singapore, Hong Kong, is so huge that different types of business models can work side by side. So our market so far has been the institutional market. We don't have a retail license. We don't actually sell to the public. We sell to banks and insurance companies. So far, based on our annual report, you might find that we have raised more than 1 billion US from mainland China. And it's only through these wholesale channels. So we're not fighting for this kind of, retail money that is very fee sensitive or expense sensitive. Our clients, the banks and insurance companies, on sale to the public because they have the licenses. And they are the guys fighting using different ways of raising money. They can be very fee conscious. But we are not in that part of the market. So I'm trying to explain to you a rather complex situation, but in essence, we are wholesalers. We are not retailers. The time will come when we have to directly fight for the retail public's money. When that happens, I think we'll be ready with products that are also very fee conscious, very mindful of the fact that the public look at your fees very carefully. We are experimenting with the use of computer-driven AI models for part of our research process, but not the entire thing. For us, we can't totally replace a human being.
All right. Well, thank you very much for coming on the show and speaking with us this morning, Dato' Sri. It's been a pleasure having you.
Thank you very much, Lynn.
I've been speaking with Dato' Sri Chia Ching Hai, co-chairman and co-chief investment officer at Value Partners. This has been The Breakfast Grill. I'm Lynn Mark, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.